For 50 points and bragging rights, what is the biggest drone company in the world? If you said DJI, you are correct. Question 2, who is often the face of that company when it comes to policy, regulations, and law? Well, you won't see his face, but you will hear his voice right now. On today's edition of The Buzz, we're delighted to be joined by arguably the world's most famous drone lawyer. Now, if you haven't already guessed, it's Brendan Shulman, who is DJI's Vice President of Policy and Legal Affairs. Brendan, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Listen, 2020 is shaping up to be really quite a year. I mean, we've had a global pandemic, which also had an impact on DJI's production. We've got discussion of remote ID for drones going on. There's made in the US emphasis happening in the United States around technology and allegations of privacy and data security from Chinese made products. So there's lots to talk about. And let's start really with the pandemic, because it began in China. And I believe by February, Shenzhen was more or less locked down and staff there were working from home. What was the impact like for DJI when that happened?
I think it was around the Chinese New Year vacation. So that was extended for a week. And then there was a period of people working remotely, similar to what we're all doing here. And then people started coming back to work as the restrictions eased and conditions improved. But I do think that just like any other business, particularly one that relies on people getting together and building and making things, it has been disruptive, and we've had some delays and other associated things. Not to mention the travel issues have been tough. I usually go over there about 4 times a year just to synchronize with my colleagues there and work on the various safety initiatives that we do, like geofencing, ADS-B, remote ID, and so on. So it's just I think very similar to other companies, particularly global ones. Where you can't bring people together the way you used to.
One of the things that your job often entails is attending conferences and networking and just knowledge sharing. And of course, conferences aren't taking place either. Are you attending a lot of remote virtual conferences? And what's that experience been like for you?
I've been to a few. We held our own AirWorks conference a few weeks ago, and that was entirely virtual. Record attendance. I did a keynote. And had sort of what we called a brain date type of smaller discussion session. And I've been to a few others, Commercial UAV Expo, did some stuff there. And the Pennsylvania Drone Conference that's coming up, I believe, next week is another one. I'll be on panel for AUVSI Exponential in a few weeks as well.
In some of the numbers I've seen in recent years, we've seen a growth in the enterprise market and the more professional drones relative to the consumer side of things. Just in general terms, is that a market sector that you see as becoming more and more important over time?
I think so, and primarily because businesses are just learning how to use drones, how to get value out of them. We're still very early on in the adoption curve. I do think, just like we discussed, every business pretty much is disrupted by the pandemic, so that, there may be some, dip or slowdown in exploring new technologies, naturally, just given that people are focused on core competencies at the moment to get through the pandemic challenges. But my prediction, again, I view the industry mostly from a policy perspective, but of course I love seeing the way that drones are being put to use in new industries and for new applications. And to me, it's just obvious, and particularly from some of the stories and case studies coming out of our AirWorks conference, with LiDAR applications developing, for example, there's tremendous potential still ahead of us. And of course, part of that is to achieve policy outcomes that nurture and support those use cases. You know, we have to get a reasonable and workable version of remote ID running so that we can move ahead with flight over people and night operations under a set of rules rather than waivers. So that's kind of pending and outstanding. And we continue to have other challenges, for example, the role of state and local government, which, you know, depending on where you go, you might see a sign posted that says you can't fly your drone here. Or, for example, in New York City, the city is relying on a law developed in the 1940s, which was intended to govern where you could take off or land an airplane. So namely, that's an airport type of provision. But because it restricts the takeoff and landing of aircraft and drones are now considered aircraft, you've got the city saying drones are prohibited in New York City, which doesn't make any sense because there's so much benefit. So even just a week or so ago, New York City Council passed a bill, which we supported, that would study the use of drones for what's called the Local Law 5 facade inspection. This is something the building owners have to do every 5 years. And when that isn't done on schedule or isn't done thoroughly, stuff falls off the building. And just about a year ago, a piece of facade from a building fell in Times Square and unfortunately killed a woman. And that was at least in part the impetus for looking to new technologies to address that problem. So it makes no sense for New York City to rely on a 1940s law that says you can't take off or land an aircraft when you're talking about an aircraft that fits in the palm of your hand. So sure, there's lots of use cases, but we obviously need risk-based and reasonable policy to support those.
The whole issue of data security and privacy has kind of been in the news and bubbling along really for some time now. Now, just to give us some context, I know that DJI in the past has tried to acknowledge the need for government agencies to have, in their minds, a more secure platform. And so DJI, in conjunction with these agencies, produce something called the government edition of some drones. Could you explain what the difference is in those products?
Sure. And by the way, I think everyone is entitled to data privacy and protection. It's not just government customers. The question is, what level of assurance do you need for your mission? Obviously, a defense agency is going to have a very different standard from real estate photography company, for example. But we have a wide variety of options and features that give you the security that you might want. Starting with just the basic proposition, as I think you and everyone watching this knows, you don't need to connect your drone or send data anywhere to get use of the drone. So if you're doing aerial photography, for example, the real estate agent is taking pictures and then later importing it into Photoshop or something and then posting it later to their website for the real estate listing. You can do all that up to the point where you share the photo with your real estate listing. You can do all of that with the drone offline. Now, that's not the only way to ensure security, but it's really simple and we all can do it just by keeping your phone in airplane mode or using the special feature we created called local data mode, which was recently validated by FTI Consulting as actually working, just like we said. It cuts off the data transmission between our software and the internet. You can still use your other phone internet functions, but you've got data assurance on the transmission from our software. The government edition products, the reason we designed those is not because there's a problem in the ordinary off-the-shelf products, not at all. None of the videos or flight logs are being automatically sent to us, contrary to allegations. So you can actually keep the drone online and you don't have to use local data mode. The data is not automatically coming to us. But what the Department of the Interior said to us when they wanted the solution developed is we don't want choice in data transmission. We want it so that our employees can't possibly send data to you or anywhere else if they make a mistake or if they are rogue employees or they wake up one day in a bad mood and start synchronizing. So we stripped out the choice in those products. So it's effectively the solution that they wanted for those missions. We also took the firmware updating process entirely offline, and we removed the geofencing, which we obviously don't need to have in place for an agency like DOI. So that, in essence, is the government edition. It is, in some ways, less flexible than the rest of the products, which give you the choice of keeping your data local if you want it.
So when the Department of Interior expressed concern and, in fact, banned Chinese-made drones and Chinese-made products, were they not looking at, oh, well, the government edition satisfies us, let's keep using those? What in your mind, is behind that sort of global blanket ban?
It's clearly politics. If you look at the full story there, because we did develop exactly what they asked us to, and they validated it. DOI examined the security. They asked NASA to validate it and examine it. In addition to what's called the Idaho National Laboratory, which is a prestigious security research institute, on behalf of the Department of Homeland Security, where we often hear there's guidance issued on drone cybersecurity. Okay, that's great. So DHS had someone look at it, and they confirmed that this meets the needs of DOI and can be used for their missions. And that, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go and read the Idaho National Laboratory paper that studied the security of that product and confirmed that it works. And they also had a commercial party validate it. So the only plausible explanation, and by the way, what is DOI even doing with the drone? They're observing trees burning in the forest. They're counting fish. Occasionally, they're trying to rescue someone who's missing. I don't think any of those missions are of national security importance. I could be wrong, but no one has explained to us why those missions are sensitive in any way. And so non-sensitive missions, yet the equipment's validated and built to their specifications and approved. They released a statement saying they were going to buy and use these products going forward. And then a few months later, not only were those products banned, but all of the drones, because the other American-made products obviously contain Chinese components, just like every other consumer electronics. All the stuff we're using on this video conference is made in China. So actually, the whole program is grounded. And that can only be politically driven, given all the things that we did to satisfy them and their own validations that the product was secure. And I think that story really just shows you that everything else going on is a function of politics. Because since that time, since the time of the Department of the Interior grounding and the secretarial order that came out grounding the whole fleet, we've had at least two other organizations examine the security of our products, namely Booz Allen Hamilton, who looked at three products on behalf of Precision Hawk and concluded there's no evidence of data connections to China, DJI, or any unexpected party, as well as FTI Consulting, which validated not only the local data mode, but also our Pilot PE, as well as Flight Hub Enterprise products, and also acknowledged that DJI uses best practices in data security. So how many different times do people need to prove a negative here? And I also, we just go back to the basic proposition that if you still don't believe all these other parties and their fine work on this question, just keep the data, the drone offline. Just like don't connect it to the internet. So look, to me, there's just no other explanation here other than a broader geopolitical trade dispute, economic protectionism, and things like that, because there is no data security issue. And you know, very important, I think, for your community and people watching this is, like, let's all keep in mind, we all know what drones do. They take aerial pictures. And if the government's going to say that poses a national security problem, then why are we only worried about Chinese drones? To me, that means all the drones are a national security threat. And we very quickly go from a situation where certain products are banned to certain people are banned, or certain companies, because those companies and people can't be trusted. They've never been validated or vetted to the high cybersecurity standards of the U.S. military. And what does that do for the industry? So this whole direction is very troubling, not just for DJI. This really is an industry-wide issue. If we're just going to say, yeah, there's a real cybersecurity, national security problem with drones if they're Chinese, well, why isn't there a problem if they're not Chinese too? And what does that do to you as the drone operator? So we should all be worried about where this is all going.
given that the Department of Interior had previously signed off on the government edition, what was the reaction like? What went through your mind when suddenly they came back and said, nope, these don't work for us?
I think just frankly, like, what else could we possibly do, right? We you know, validations, customization, you know, proving the negative, you know, so to some extent, just frustration. Like, you know, knowing that security is a solvable issue, you know, we've got, this is not the only product as to which there are, you know, potentially security concerns. Although again, if you're looking at burning trees, I'm not sure what those are, but let's assume there's a security issue that someone needs to solve. Well, we do that for other technology, right? With standards or requirements and then testing and validation. So why are drones being treated differently? And, you know, you get to the point where, you know, it's just frustrating for politics to be overcoming the facts, as well as all the hard work that went into designing something for and at the request of a U.S. federal agency, which, by the way, was leading a sort of a group of agencies. They kind of wanted this outcome to facilitate drone use across not just DOI, but others. So we thought DOI itself is a very small market for us, almost insignificant, I would say, compared to all the things we're doing globally. But we put a lot of people on that project to get it done because we thought it was important to finally resolve these you know, the mythology. And yet, look where it ended up. So to me, unfortunately, you know, just kind of an example of it's just almost not worth trying to come up with a solution because the solution politically is unacceptable.
Is there a concern at DJI that there is now a perception that's been planted, even though you've been presenting evidence to negate that perception and to try to, you know, seek truth through facts, as I think Mao would have said. But the fact is that once an allegation has been made, and as a lawyer, you're certainly aware of this, that sometimes that can stick, even in the face of evidence to the contrary. So are you guys now a little bit in kind of a corner where you've been placed in a position where you need to be continually defending yourself?
I think there's some truth in that, but we really do believe that technology speaks for itself. People who know drones and know how to use them, actually operate them, understand these issues and understand how to manage security and can just see that the drone isn't transmitting data. It's not that hard to use local data mode or airplane mode. So on one level, we have confidence that customers who kind of know what they're doing aren't that concerned. On the other, sure, you know, if you repeat something enough times, people just start to believe it because it's what they always see in the headlines. And, you know, it's not until the eighth paragraph of the article that you learn that there have been six or more validations of DJI products to the contrary. And so the doubt, I think, is an issue. But also, it's been, you know, it's distracting for me because there's lots of work we need to do in the industry on policy to move the industry forward as a whole. And so, like, I, you know, more interviews that I do now are about this topic than, say, remote ID or the state and local issues or flight over people, night operations, you know, things that matter to the whole industry and that I've spent the past 5 years advocating for the benefit of everyone who flies drones. I'm now having too much time taken up by these issues, which, you know, fundamentally are not about progress in the industry or innovation. They're about just dispelling fears and rumors. And, you know, to the extent other companies in the industry think that spreading rumors, making allegations, attacking us on this issue is good for them because now they have a market, that's really unfortunate because for years I've worked together with all the companies in the industry, including our fiercest competitors, whether that was GoPro or 3DR or Parrot, as little as 2 to 3 years ago, we worked very closely. And that was good work that really helped everyone. So to kind of have this issue dominate and to see organizations that should be allies with us on things that really matter to innovation and progress, now just sort of trying to, you know, fearmonger. Honestly, it's very upsetting. And I think to people who've worked hard in this industry, either with me in various, you know, committees or task groups or, you know, standards, whatever it is, who know my work and are familiar with what DJI has consistently advocated for, it really is disappointing, because our, you know, our record of working in the industry is to empower everyone and to move things forward for everyone, and not to make competitive advantages the subject of technology policy.
I've certainly detected a real shift within the industry, and particularly this year. And for me, one of the real signals of that was back in June as Parrot prepared to launch its Anaphi USA model. And there were a couple of promotions that were done earlier in June. One was "Don't trust Chinese drones." And I believe the other one was directly "Don't trust DJI." I'm curious what your reaction was when that campaign surfaced.
I don't think I have anything more specific to say. In general, I'm disappointed with companies that think that making people afraid of drones is good for them. I mean, we've been through a decade of the public and lawmakers being scared of drones for different reasons, spying on backyards, colliding with airliners, you know, being misused, hurting people, terrorist attacks, you know, misuse. And now some in the industry think it's a good idea to make people afraid and distrustful of drones because of where they're made. And I just, you know, I don't need to point the finger at any one company. I just think that's bad for anyone to be doing. And in the long run, it's really going to hurt everyone. And like, we're not going to make progress as an industry if that's the marketing message, is don't trust this drone, trust our drone. Well, why shouldn't I trust a drone that might be saving someone's life or preventing fires? You know, we're up to actually over 470 people who've been saved through the use of a drone. And like, before you start saying you shouldn't use it or you shouldn't trust it, you really got to look at all the benefits that these products have brought to society. And I just think in general, it's very disappointing. And, you know, many of these allegations just aren't grounded in the facts. You've got certain people citing software applications that don't even work with our drones. They work with our ground-based social media cameras. But these people are alleging, and they're not even citing versions of our software that exist. So, you know, it's almost embarrassing, I think, to see these kinds of things now become the main marketing message of companies that I really would have hoped would join us as peers in all the other more important policy issues we have to work on.
We're living, and I know you can't really comment politically, but we're living in an era when the U.S. president sometimes makes fairly rapid decisions based on what he personally believes to be best. So we've seen the most recent example would be with TikTok. It has led to some speculation that DJI could, in a worst case scenario, be placed on a list of foreign entities whose products are banned in the United States. Is that a real concern for DJI? And if so, how do you combat that?
I think all the variations on this type of policy are a concern. You know, which draft you're looking at on which week is just a function of the overall issue. There was a draft executive order several months ago. Obviously, that would be a problem, mostly for Americans, federal agencies, grant recipients, or anyone flying over federally managed lands would be restricted in the drones they could use, as well as even American drones that contain foreign components, which to me is like every drone. So again, this is not a DJI concern. This is an industry concern, because I don't know what products are out there that would escape that. But if there are a few, like a handful of companies, and they're the ones lobbying that because they want to market in it, and it's going to leave all of the smaller businesses, American businesses, out, because those businesses, of course, rely on Chinese components, because that's what exists in consumer electronics. This is like an industry-wide problem. And we're seeing, you know, other groups like universities now raise concerns about these types of policies. So, you know, whichever variation you might happen to talk about in any given week, these are all a problem for the entire industry. And again, they don't solve a problem. So if there's a real concern for about security, the government knows how to solve it. Standards, requirements, depends on the mission, right? Not every agency or grant recipient has the same security needs depending on the mission. And yet these proposals would appear to place a military specification level of security required across all the federal government. But it's not even that. It's not even a security requirement or specification that any company could have a fair shot at meeting. It's simply a question of where the thing is made, or where the headquarters of a company is who makes it. And that's just not a way to solve any problem, because you could have a totally insecure product from France that gets a green light, whereas a very secure or even totally offline Chinese product is banned, even though the Chinese product is obviously more secure in that configuration. So I just think it's a horrible direction for the industry to allow the issue of security to be dealt with this way through policy, whichever particular policy happens to be on the table at any given moment.
Final question, just related to this whole kind of area we've been touching on, is that we recently saw one of your competitors, Autel, announced that they were going to be creating a made in the US drone because they were going to do final assembly on one of their products in the United States. The news release made no mention of the fact that Autel is in fact a Chinese company. What was your reaction when you saw this move or strategy from one of your competitors?
I think it fits into what we've discussed before. This is now the hot marketing angle of the moment without real consideration of what matters. And I think it's a fear factor as well. Yeah, sure, Autel is Chinese as well, but you know, when companies say something is made in the USA, that's actually a regulated statement that the Federal Trade Commission has very specific requirements concerning. And I haven't evaluated whether any particular claim does or does not actually meet a made in USA label, but certainly that has a legal significance that may or may not be fulfilled depending on what the company's actually doing. I also don't think it solves anything. Like you know, assembling or making it here, if the company's Chinese, under these proposals, wouldn't be enough to escape the policies. Now, it might satisfy some notion of you know, job creation, protectionism, feel good, nationalism. Okay, I get it. And by the way, if that's what we want, if that's what the policymakers want, we simply want to protect or grow an industry. Okay, let's just say that and make that the driver here rather than these false allegations about security, which are going to scare everyone away from drones. Like, we should just be upfront with what the policies are designed to do. And there are other ways to, you know, you could subsidize, you could, in fact, they are. There's the military's Trusted Capital Marketplace program intended to grow domestic U.S. manufacturers. And some companies have already received Department of Defense grants under the CARES Act. So, you know, that money is already starting to flow. And okay, that seems like one far more legitimate way to support an industry that may be politically important without damaging firefighters, educators, students who receive grants, state and local police, and scare the public policymakers about what drones are actually doing and whether your data is going somewhere overseas. Like, there are ways to do this in a way that's makes a lot more sense, accomplishes those kinds of objectives, and doesn't damage the industry along the way.
You mentioned earlier that these issues have really chewed up a lot of your time recently when you'd really sooner be talking about other policy issues. And I know that remote ID is a big one that's in the background there. What is the latest on remote ID, and what is DJI's position going forward?
Well, we, our position has been consistent for years. If you look back at our paper in March 2017, we said remote ID is important. Like, it's going to solve problems, accountability, security. But what we said in that paper, ironically, before all this concern about DJI data security in early 2017, is that pilot privacy matters. We need to protect the privacy interests of the drone operator. So we're on record before any other company in the industry as saying that. But of course, what also matters is cost and burden, because we're not going to have an effective remote ID solution that actually accomplishes security and accountability goals unless people actually do it. And they won't do it if the cost is too high or it's too complicated or too burdensome. So consistently for 3.5 years, we've said basically the same thing. Let's do this, but let's do it right. And when the NPRM, that's the FAA proposal, came out at the end of last year, we were surprised. I was surprised because I was on the rulemaking committee with 73 other people that recommended to the FAA that you could do this either of two ways. You could either technically do it as a broadcast, emitting radio out from the drone, or you could do it by connecting the drone to the internet and providing a sort of data service. The FAA proposal is do it both ways. And when you say do something two ways, you are obviously raising costs. And our concern on the network approach for a long time has been, what will that cost? That sounds pretty complicated. Someone has to run and secure that system. And we had an economics firm look at it and estimate that it will cost $5.5 billion, which is 9 times what the FAA estimated in the NPRM. So their estimate is way too low for the what they're proposing. And look, we want this to work. We want the security agencies to have a solution. Not only do we want it, we've given it to them. In our, you know, again, early days with Aeroscope, the idea was, let's create a solution that solves problems, and one that we can do with a software update, sort of easily retrofit, and it doesn't cost money to the user. It doesn't get in your way. It's just there, like a license plate on your car. And so we did that in Aeroscope, which is only available to law enforcement, security agencies, and critical facility owners. But the same kind of approach is the broadcast industry standard under ASTM's remote ID standard. And then you've got your solution without discouraging people from using it, because it's just built into the drone. You turn it on, it's there. That's what we'd like to see, at least as an option. Now, there are others who might prefer network solutions for various reasons. You can get extra features, you can get other services on top. You might have more flexibility in terms of the privacy settings, because, you know, an internet connected solution could give you different levels of access if you're law enforcement. Okay, great. So let's make it a choice. Let's give, this is what we want in innovation, right? Let's give drone users the choice between broadcast and network and not make them do both. So you asked for an update. Everything we've heard from the FAA is that they are on track to finalizing this rule by the end of the year. That is their goal. They say they're on track. There are obviously some remaining steps, particularly clearing the rule through the White House OMB, I think is still yet to be done. But it sounds like we're just a few months away from seeing what the outcome is of the 53,000 comments they received and how they responded to that. There will then be an implementation period, which could take, 3 years under the proposal, sort of phased in terms of, when you can use existing equipment, when you can sell equipment that is or isn't compliant, and so on. And there's also the question of what happens to drones that just can't comply. And under the proposal, you'd have to throw them away. I'm hoping you can either do a software update or attach some kind of external module so that people don't need to be wasteful. We don't want to sell new products because of remote ID. We want existing products to work and to try to retrofit them. But under the proposal the FAA sent out, we would not be able to do that. So we'll see what happens. I think it'll be quite a moment when this thing finally is out. to see where it's come, and hopefully the comments that everyone sent in will make a difference.
One of the other longer term developments in the field is that of UTM, or unmanned traffic management, and the integration of manned and unmanned aircraft in the same airspace. Do you see, when we look at some of the options that you're proposing or that may are being considered for remote ID, that those two might be able to work together, that if we have the technology on the drone for remote ID already, that that could be integrated in some sort of UTM sphere?
It could. And in fact, that is that seems to be part of the reason the FAA required the network method as well as broadcast, because of the idea that it would be more complete, as well as feed into UTM traffic management solutions in the future. The issue is twofold. Number one, that imposes all the costs, or at least a lot of the costs of UTM, on people today, years ahead of the existence of UTM, and on operators that aren't going to use it or don't need to use it, at least for several years. And number two, you can have UTM with a broadcast solution by networking the receivers. Just like today in the aviation world, you can log in and see where ADS-B, airplanes that are flying and broadcasting ADS-B locally, are being received by receivers that are located around the country and fed into a network system. So you can have UTM and network the receiver side of broadcast. So there's no reason for UTM, which we do support and look forward to the benefits that UTM will bring, but there's no justification for using UTM to drive the remote ID outcome, because it's not here yet. And when we get there, oh, by the way, you also, I don't think UTM is going to suddenly exist everywhere all at once. So it's sort of like how Lance only covers, I think at this point, 80% of the airports and controlled airspace. I think UTM will probably just exist in certain places at the beginning and not the whole country all at once. And so why would you mandate remote ID to facilitate UTM if UTM may not exist everywhere for a long time as well? And it could be, okay, if you're in this urban environment or controlled airspace, that's UTM. And if you're not, you're not. But this remote ID proposal is for everyone, everywhere, all the time. So I just think there's a mismatch, although you're right. Once connected, additional services eventually could become available, including traffic management services.
This is a completely out of left field and just an aside, but something that happened this morning is I'd written a story about the Mavic Mini the other day, and I looked up the price here in Canada, and it gives me the price in US dollars on the DJI store, and it showed the price of that Mavic Mini at $349 US. And so I dutifully wrote that down in the story, and it wasn't long before commenters in the United States were saying, where can I buy this for $349? It's $399 here. And I chatted with someone else from the industry today, and he said, oh, I think that's a tariff issue. Do you know why it's more expensive in the United States than in Canada?
I don't have insight into specific pricing decisions. But I think it's reasonable to conclude that the tariffs, which do apply to our products, are at least in part having an impact in the United States. But I couldn't say for sure how we do international pricing. It's very common to see variations based on currency and shipping costs, and you know, again, not like literally not my department, but of course policies that impose tariffs do actually result in cost increases. So it could be.
Gotcha. We're going to wrap up in just a minute or two, but I know you mentioned earlier that there are a number of policy issues that you would really sooner be talking about. Is there anything else that we have not touched on that is really sort of front of mind for you these days that you just don't get a chance to talk about much?
Thank you. It's primarily remote ID, so I'm glad we had a chance to discuss that. And look, I just, whether it's remote ID, where we did see a lot of engagement and over 50,000 people commenting, or any other policy that impacts people who operate, we really need people to speak up and be engaged. You know, if the proposals to ban drones, either by federal government or their contractors or people in agreements with federal government or grant recipients, federal funding recipients, or possibly even those who operate in your federal facilities, if that's you and you might be impacted, you need to get involved because, you know, it's like I said before, these policies actually have more of an impact on the operators than they do us. You know, we have a global market. Obviously, the United States is a very important market, but it's not the only one. And the people who would really be impacted by those proposals are the operators. And so they need to speak up and get engaged, just like I've been saying for years on state and local policy, remote ID, registration, basically anything. This really is the kind of issue where multiple voices can make a difference. So if that might impact you, you know, just, you know, look for ways to speak up, contact your member of Congress. If you need some guidance and direction, I'm not hard to find on Twitter under Drone Laws. You can drop me a direct message and I'll make a suggestion as to where to send your comments. That's really the way it's supposed to work. The stakeholders who are impacted need to speak up, and that's not just one company.
A lot of people have found since the pandemic that they're working from home, and for many people I know, it's been a slacker period. I know I've certainly been busy, but it sounds like you have been incredibly busy. Has it been more busy than you were before even?
It's always been busy. Honestly, I can't think of a slow period in the 5 years I've been at DJI. There's never really been a slow week. But that includes this summer and August. August is usually a little bit slower. Not this year. So look, things are playing out. But that's really been true in the drone industry for a long time. It's why I'm excited about it. And you know, get up every day eager to try to make a difference to secure risk-based, reasonable policies so that people can use and get the most out of the products that they want. And do great things like saving hundreds of people from danger. So sure, I don't mind a little extra work and a very busy summer. But I don't see any real downturn in how much we need to do. And that's true globally. You know, we've been busy in Europe and Asia Pacific on policy issues too that are not related to cybersecurity or trade or China, but that actually are about advancing the industry, risk-based solutions. And, you know, that remains important. And to the extent I can, it's the top priority for us.
Well, I think that anyone who has followed the drone field would acknowledge that DJI is not only the market leader, but is really the company that truly created the market for drones and created so much of the technology that others have since been able to adopt. And my own view, you know, having some background with Chinese companies and having lived in China previously, is that, you know, for a company like DJI that is so focused on technology, focused on its product, and also focused on market share and maintaining its position as a leader, is that to me personally, it seems very unlikely that there would be problems within its products that it would not immediately address if they felt that it would threaten its market share or credibility. So that's my own personal view. But I really appreciate you taking the time to walk us through this. It's been incredibly informative and interesting for me and for our listeners. So Brendan Shulman, DJI's Vice President of Policy and Legal Affairs, thank you so much for your time. And I wish you the best with this issue, and hopefully it won't be an issue for you as we move forward.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Certainly, it's been easy to spot the changes in the drone industry. It just doesn't feel as collaborative as it used to be. Now, competition is great, of course. It leads to better products, better prices, and greater choice. But please, can't we all just get along? Sure we can. I'm Scott Simme, and this has been The Buzz.